Hello and welcome to Under the Scales. Before we begin, I need to thank everyone who has submitted a story by clicking the Tell Your Story link on our website, underthescales.com. We've gotten quite a few and are slowly beginning to respond to some of you. We won't be able to answer each one until we get some more help. We're working on it. Thanks for the emails too. Same story there. Today, I'm speaking with David Steinberg. If you're a fish fan, there's a good chance you've been affected positively by David Steinberg in some way. He's on the setlist committee, which maintains the accuracy of what actually happens at fish shows for posterity. And he's written a book we'll talk about, and he's the unofficial statistician of fish, as you'll hear. He describes himself as socially awkward, but I found him to be captivating and engaging and tremendously funny. And most of all, extremely observant about anything fish-related. Enjoy.
Interpretation. Reflection. Misdirection. That's my job.
It really is my job. I write words for fish. I'm Tom Marshall, and this is Under the Scales.
Well, so I'm here with David Steinberg. David, we're here in your hotel room at the Aria in Vegas, and it's the first show, which was great. Did you like it?
I liked it a lot.
The first show happened, and we're sitting here on basically noon of the second day. So we don't know, even though this will come out after the Halloween show and everyone will know what it was. David and I were doing a little speculation, but we're going to keep it off the record because I do not know, and he does not know. And I like it to stay that way. I've always liked it to stay that way. The guy in the elevator just told me he 100% knows it's Zappa, but you said you ruled that out too.
I ruled it out because in 95, according to, I think it's the fish book, Page vetoed Joe's Garage because he didn't like the lyrics.
Well, he probably likes them, but probably doesn't want anyone
or
to think.
He didn't want to sing them, at
right,
least.
That thinks that he's, you know, espousing that, whatever that, whatever he's, Frank Zappa was singing about at the time, and some of that's nasty.
Especially in the year of Trump.
Ah, good point. Right. Time to clean things up a little bit. So, actually, this podcast will come out after the election as well.
You guys are so lucky that the election is over for you.
People listening to this already know two things: what the Halloween album was and who is our president.
Halloween's my 333rd show.
Oh, wow. 333rd show.
Will be Halloween.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's fantastic. I was at one point you helped me and we should tell the audience why you and I were doing this exercise, but you helped me figure out all my shows. And at the time, I think I had come out to about 250. And I haven't done it since. So I think I'm getting very, very close to 300, if not just over.
Yeah, 300, it's harder. And once you get past 100, it gets harder to find numbers to get excited for.
Right, right.
Like my wife just got over 100.
Oh, okay. My daughter calculated her, and possibly on your page, calculated her number of shows. And I was surprised that she's in the 30s. I would have guessed like 15 or something, but I've taken her to a lot.
Yeah, did you drag her to shows?
Oh, yeah. So, David, we skirted upon that. In a weird way, you're the unofficial statistician for fish. And there's lots of reasons why, but we'll get into that. But let's talk about what you and I have been, that's ongoing right now. A very important stat. What's that one called?
Highest number of songs played in a year.
Okay. Right. And there were three full songs that were added to that, right?
Yes, there
last
was
night.
Not Destiny, which surprised me.
Crimes
of the Mind, Dog Stole Things.
Dog Stole Things, right.
And whatever was after Dog Stole Thing, what was it?
Uh-oh.
Beauty of My Dreams, that was the other one.
Oh.
That's only the second one of all 3-0.
Wow.
Before that was 7-22-03.
Okay. All right, and we're all the way up to 200.
We're currently at 230 different songs for the year.
230, and the record is 251.
251.
So they have to now get...
No, they have to get 22.
Sorry, 22 to beat, right.
We're assuming, let's say it's Ziggy Stardust. It might not be. It might be something else.
Right.
But just using that as a good baseline. That's 11 songs.
Right.
And you, Auld Lang Syne's like the free square in Bingo.
Okay.
You're going to get that. Other than, do you know what year they did not play that where it doesn't count?
Well, no, I don't.
12-31-90.
To me, it's like they still played it, but played it after New Year's.
They played it over the PA.
Ah.
They did not play it. At New Year's, they had a recording of Auld Lang Syne play.
Oh, so that didn't count, of course.
No. However, there are still exactly 20 odd line signs. Because 12:30:89 at the Wetlands, they played after midnight, and they at the Arnagar, hey, it's after midnight, it's New Year's Eve, technically, and they played it then.
Now, when you're Phish and you're playing a concert that goes past midnight, does that count as the day before?
When the show started.
Okay.
Because otherwise, I don't want to deal with that.
Right.
you get all sorts of messes with years on New Year's Eve. And besides, you remember the early days. Yeah. Do you really want to figure out when midnight hit at a club?
No. Exactly. You'll never do it.
It's the same reason why I don't have indoor and outdoor shows. People ask me that all the time. Why don't you let me split between indoor and outdoors?
Oh.
And the real reason is I don't want to go back and figure out every single venue Phish has ever played and whether or not it's indoor or outdoors.
Right.
My weasel way out of it is the Liberty Lunch in 1993. A bar in Austin, a show I attended, so I know this. Part of it was indoors, and you could also go outdoors. So it's both an indoor and an outdoor show, depending where you were in the venue.
So again, do you want to call that an indoor or outdoor? And everyone will argue no matter what you choose.
Yeah, it's an indoor show. Okay. But the fact is, that's my official, whenever I ask me, I use that as my rationalization. Let's face it, the real reason is I don't want to go and make this some giant text file that calls every show indoor or outdoors and have to search against that.
And what is a shed? Is that indoor or outdoor?
Shed's outdoor, I think. I mean, again, except for SPAC.
Yeah, I mean, because the shed is so big.
But also just because it has that back wall.
Oh, right.
So if you're in the balcony, you do not feel like you're in an outdoor show.
No, you're right. There's a wall behind you. You're right.
That's like my favorite thing about SPAC is being in the balcony and feeling like I'm in a small theater.
And the sound is probably pretty. Yeah. I don't think I've actually ever been up there. So why don't we say, like, so you've been a fan for almost as long as there's been a Phish. You're well-known by the band, but I don't think you've ever had any kind of formal relationship with them, right?
I have a weird relationship with them.
Yeah.
There's like three levels I find. There's like three different kinds of ways. First, there's people who just are fans of the band, have no idea they exist, or they see them in the audience and just kind of say, oh, there's that relationship, but they don't actually ever talk to them.
Right.
Then there's the people who get backstage.
Okay.
I was never one of those.
So you're somewhere between two and three?
No, I'm actually in a weirder. Then there's the people like, the good thing about having no social skills and knowing you have no social skills, is you go into it saying, okay, how do I stop being that guy? Don't always succeed, but at least the thought in my head.
Right.
But yeah, my relationship, I don't know if anyone else who has quite the one that I do.
No, you have a very unusual one.
Because.
And you also have a interesting relationship with the audience too. Like, you wear a cape, and you still wear a cape.
I tried to stop, but I'll never be allowed to, so.
So you're embracing your sort of math genius wizard persona, is that right?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. Sometimes people just don't know what the cape is. Like, are you a wizard? But yeah, my relationship, though, is just, I mean, I don't want to speculate too much. I don't know.
Right.
But they kind of respect me in my own way. But at the same time, I did an album cover for Trey.
Yeah, exactly. Bar 17 had an addendum called 18 Steps. And Trey contacted you personally, right?
Through an intermediary. Okay. So I don't have Trey's email address or anything. Okay. Don't ask me for it. I don't have it.
But he needed you to do an 18-step math proof or something?
So what I did was I came up with some very, very elaborate way of saying 17 plus 1 equals 18. I opened up grad school textbooks I hadn't cracked in years to find, like, things like Stirling numbers of the first type, and I managed to get the number phi in there solely because it's phi.
That's a number?
It's a constant. It's like pi is a constant, phi is a constant.
Okay.
But unfortunately, I had just to multiply by zero because you can't do anything with it.
Yeah, I saw some crazy math going on there.
Yeah.
Integral. Well, I don't know. I mean, I made it through calculus, but not
there's,
much further.
There's a summation.
Okay.
Summation from 1 to infinity of 1 over 2 to the I. Which turns out is 2.
Okay.
No, from 1, it actually would be 1. I made it from 0, we'll make it 2. I forget which one I did.
Okay.
So, like, I did that. Mike recently mailed me a shirt.
He did?
Yes, because I'm a big fan of the song Beltless Buckler, which I've still never seen live.
Oh, yeah.
No, and he had this belt shirt. And he randomly sent it to me. I'm like, well, I got something in the mail from Fish Productions. I'm like, huh, I wonder what it could be. Like, I actually got notes that I'm going to get something in the mail. I'm like, God, I hope it's not a restraining order or something like that.
Now, Beltless Buckler was on a pretty good album of his.
Inside In.
Yeah, and that also had, was it called Couch Lady?
Couch Lady is on that.
Yeah, so Mike came up and played Couch Lady with Amphibian. I think it was one of our last concerts.
Really?
Yeah. So Mike guested with us on that.
That actually, for some reason, both my wife and I.
That's a great song.
Yeah. That whole album, both for my wife and I, really, before we even were together, or we were barely together, resonated with both of us.
Yeah. No, I really like that one. In terms of his other projects, I love the stuff he did with Leo Kottke.
Do you have the Joey Arkenstadt album?
What's that one?
The Joey Arkenstadt album?
No.
Do you know about Joey Arkenstadt?
Yeah, I know about the fake, yeah.
Yeah, this is, for those that don't know, Mike made this movie called Rising Low, in which he, was it Alan Woody? I always want to call him Woody Al. Alan Woody died, and they did a tribute concert.
The bass player for?
Yeah, for Government Mule.
Right.
And they did a tribute for him, in which they had like 30 different bassists each play on one track. And so Mike filmed a documentary about this. And in the middle of it, there's this guy named Joey Arkenstadt.
They keep talking about him.
Yes. And to this day, I'm really, really sure Mike made that up. But I haven't crossed the line of being 100% sure. It just was pulled off so... Like, I'm pretty sure there's really not a famous bassist named Joey Arkenstadt, known only to musicians. And some of the people can't pull it off well in the movie. And they're like, oh, yeah, Joey Arkenstadt. I love this guy. But there's a Joey Arkenstadt solo album called Bane that, like, hardly anyone knows about. It starts out with Joey Arkenstadt saying... Like, the actual guy who played Joey Arkenstadt in the movie... saying, like, oh, I forgot those. Like, this guy, like, is he from around here? He lives in the region. And then Mike starts saying, he lives in the region. Oh, good. Everyone can hear my singing voice. That'll make this place thing really popular.
Well, I do like having a little bit of music in every one of my podcasts.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're talking about that. They start singing that, and then this thing goes into some 50-minute jam. It's this song in this, like, they're different tracks, but just one extended jam.
Oh.
At one point, there's this really spooky singing of Happy Birthday by Mike in the middle of this.
Oh, my God.
It's this really surreal, amazing album.
And you like it?
I love it.
One of your favorites?
Well, I don't know if I'm like a favorite. You got to be in the mood for it.
Okay.
This is like a year after the joke.
Oh, then I don't. Then I didn't know it existed.
It just got released randomly on some like off-brand record label. You can download it online. I don't know if it's even on iTunes. It's really, I mean, I could play it on my computer and you can listen to it in the background, but it's really...
Well, I'm going to play it right now for the podcast audience.
If you can figure out how to get it.
Yeah.
But it's just really, really surreal. It's obvious it's Mike's playing.
Right.
The whole thing about Joey is his playing is supposed to be based on the pattern of checkerboards. He always like plays and only his fingers only move in the direction that checkers pieces can move.
Right, right.
And Mike starts trying to play that for a while, and then it starts obviously just being Mike's playing.
Yep. You know what I was listening to the other day, and then I think the band played... Oh, yeah, they played Plasma.
Yeah.
But Trey's album, Plasma, a Tab album, is this uniquely situated in history where I don't think anything before that or after that has sounded like that. It's such a strange mix of the time and just that band was so well put together. Everything, the energy on it is incredible. Unbelievable. And I love that the band plays Plasma again. That's a sweet song. I like that one.
Most people do.
Yeah. That's more
that kind of was a Starting With Tab song, right?
Yes, it was. I believe so.
Yeah, I don't think I know.
Yeah, it made its debut at 7:14:01, okay. Which obviously is not a Fish show.
Okay. It's not, obviously?
Well, because Fish didn't play in 2001.
There you go. All right.
A lot of people regret they never played 2001 in 2001, but that was the first breakup.
Ah, okay, right. Yeah, obvious to you that you know, like, I always have to go back and rewind in my head, all right, what was going on, and I have to match it to events in my life before I can kind of come up with what was happening in Fish's life.
I do it the other way.
You do everything based upon Fish?
One of our wife's, mine anniversary happened at a Fish show, so I always can remember that date.
Okay. And,
we got married on Jerry's birthday, so we knew I'd never forget our anniversary as a result. Although she first suggested April 20th, and I said no.
420.
I'm not getting married on 420. Yeah. Sorry, Mel.
So, well, back to like your Fish persona, because this ties into how your relationship with a band evolved. You had a name that you don't like, a nickname that you don't like. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
I don't necessarily hate it. My general philosophy is there are four people who I do not mind them calling me that, per se.
You've heard
who the four people are.
Well, the band?
Yes. And people closely associated with the band, they also like...
I see.
But like random people...
Oh, that come up to you, hey, timer.
Yeah, or it depends how they say it. It's a PT. People try to dismiss me. That's a good way that people try to do that to dismiss me.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So I don't like it in that context, but okay. I don't have a problem with the band calling. It's kind of cool that it's a nickname I didn't give myself.
Right, right.
So, and it's a valid one.
As opposed to your other nickname, Zizzix, which is a little strange.
Yeah, it's a road south, actually not very far from here. I'm actually kind of bummed. While I drove, I didn't have quite enough time to make the extra 120 miles south.
You didn't go to Zizzix?
I didn't go that way. I have a brand new car, and I would love to have been able to make it, but when you drive 1,200 miles to get here, do you really want to drive another 250 just to take a picture of the car on the road and drive back?
I think not. And you probably already have that picture.
Well, I had the picture, not this car, a picture of myself there. I've been there. I made a few pilgrimages there over the years.
Got it.
I was, of all things, doing this teen tour in 1987, 86. 86, it must have been.
A teen tour sounds like something that like parents throw their kids on when they don't want them in the house for a month.
Mom, don't listen to this, please. I don't know if that was the case, but I went all the way over the country, went everywhere pretty much.
Okay.
But so we're driving from LA to Vegas. We spent a lot of time staying on a Greyhound bus, especially the western part where you just drove for 12 hours to get to the next place.
Right.
And so a lot of people listen to music on their Walkman and doing this, that, and the other. And I was looking out the window and I see this exit, Zizzix Road.
And that's spelled Z-Z-Y-Z-X.
Yes.
Is that named after a person or what is that?
I learned the history behind it. It turned out I'm not the only one obsessed by this thing just because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It turns out some guy who wanted to make this Mineral Hot Springs, which is right there, into some sort of resort.
Oh.
And he named it Zizzix. That way he kind of know how kind of people go AAA1.
Plumbing.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
The first in the phone book.
Yes.
He wanted to be the last.
So Z-Z-Y is... probably the last.
Yeah. And it turned out it actually is pronounced Zizzix, the road is, but I've been saying Zizzix for so long.
Okay.
The road might be Zizzix, but I'm Zizzix.
Okay, I see. So you're Zizzix, and your website is IHAZ, which is International House of Zizzix.
The reason why it's IHAZ is because Zizzix.com was taken, even back in 1996.
Oh, so someone is obsessed with it, too.
It is a computer company. I don't know if it still exists or not. The computer company had Zizzix.com. So,
and then you've people might know you. The first link on that page is the stats, is your stats.
Yes.
And a lot of people I know, almost everyone I know, has gone there and figured out how many Fish shows they've seen. Yes. And they keep their stats updated too. So, do you have a database with people's names and stuff?
No, the way that works, this is one of the things I built for myself. And it turned out that people discovered a cool loophole that I didn't think was there. I just made a page so people could make a web page that just has your dates in there.
Ah.
And that way, instead of having, because people didn't like clicking I stopped doing my own stats because once you get to over 100 shows, you don't want to sit there and go click and hold down the control key, click, click. No one wants to do that.
Right.
So I made a feature that you could go there and just have a web page that has nothing but your shows listed.
Ah. So if I go in and click yes to every show that I've seen,
you, in return, tell me how many shows I've seen in total. Are there other stats that you can derive from that?
All sorts of things. The number of shows, number of songs. I mean, if you do every show, then you won't get most common songs not seen. That's a popular one.
Oh, most common songs?
Most common songs the band has played that you have not seen.
Oh, that is a great one. Right. So,
which is part of what we're doing about the whole songs not played.
Yes. So, like, someone could still be chasing...
Well, I'm still chasing Alumni.
You've never, ever seen Alumni Blues? Ever?
I would love to have a full set list of my first show appear and discover they played Alumni, Letter to Jimmy Page in that show, and that can officially be out of the song chasing game.
But Letter to Jimmy Page as well?
Yeah, well, it's part of Alumni.
Okay.
Yeah. They only like one to play Jimmy Page without Alumni.
Oh, okay, so, okay.
In Montreal in 94.
Oh.
And why do I know that off the top of my head? I don't know, but I do.
It's because you're a math major, right? And are you still a mathematician or now,
I'm a programmer, more
a programmer?
Which is pretty much the same thing a lot.
Not really. Like, I think of a math major maybe going and doing weird stuff in rocketry or molecular science.
Well, abstract math, what it does is it takes concrete ideas and abstracts them to the general principles below them.
Okay.
And rationalizes about that. And that's what programming is. You take this task... And you figure out, what is it really doing?
Right.
Here's step one, here's step two, here's step three. Not thinking about the task, but thinking about what the underlying things you need to do are.
I see. Yeah, exactly.
So it's not quite doing math, but it's close enough to doing math that it works well. I'm very good at just the abstraction level.
As you were explaining it, you explained it so well or so far away from the way that I've explained it in my head that I forgot briefly that I was a programmer for 20 years as well.
Well, there are other ways of doing it. That's the way I do it.
So, okay, so surprising songs that haven't been played in a while.
Yeah.
Right now, I guess Foam was at the top of that list, but they played it after you and I spoke. David and I have been texting back and forth with the magic number. And when the band gets close to being able to beat the record, and now we're taking into consideration the future number of shows remaining in the year and the number of songs that they have to play... and if it appears likely that they can break the record, which we said earlier is 251, David starts texting me with more frequency.
So you said it's a weird relationship.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Trey read and loves your book. He said it captured a really, really interesting and beautiful part of fish story.
I put it on stage at the Seattle Trey Show last time.
To Trey. Yeah. Oh, I see. Oh, neat. Do you know if he grabbed it?
Someone told me he did, so maybe that's where he got it.
Okay, good. Yeah. This book came out, when?
2014. It was right 20th anniversary of the Bomb Factory. So 5/7/2014.
Okay, 5/7/2014.
That was the deadline I gave myself.
I see. Okay. Right.
So it's got to be done by then. I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I had no idea how it would sell, if it would sell.
Right.
So
let's give the name.
This has all been wonderful.
The Travel Monologue from Summer 1994, the year Fish became Fish.
Which.
That's interesting that you say that.
Didn't you make fun of me for that?
I'm not sure.
I didn't know Fish became Fish that year.
I mean, you do have justification for it. It's kind of when they started playing bigger venues.
Yes.
So we should say, so the book is basically you on tour in a car by yourself, by and large, in a Geo Metro for a lot of the Midwest and Western shows, right?
Yes, starting at Dallas, which is both amazing. That's one of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life, but also kind of unfortunate because nothing else that year lived up to that.
Oh.
And that's actually where I got the nickname The Timer, was that show, because I was like, this show, they... played a couple token songs, and then they played Tweezer and weaved in and out for the rest of the show.
Right.
And I'm thinking, for like 55 minutes in the Tweezer. In 1994, that just didn't happen.
Right.
And so I was like telling people, like, look at this. And so like back to the band.
Wait. Expound on that a little bit. So you actually were standing basically right in front of Trey with a stopwatch and a clipboard.
Well, when people say that, they picture some Flavor Flav giant stopwatch. When I get into a jam... it feels timeless to me. Like I lose all track of time.
You become unstuck in time.
Yeah. Is that Vonnegut?
Yes. That's Slaughterhouse 5.
Okay. So I don't have a sense like how long it's been or anything. So I started saying just doing it and writing down notes. But it's like, just like a watch on my hand that has a stopwatch mode.
Right.
I've never had anything beyond that.
Okay.
But so
that's how the name Timer came out. Yes. And in fact, your book is divided. I mean, it's a wonderful sort of, you describe venues, you describe sites that you see, and of course you describe in detail the fish shows that you've seen, and total number of shows in that. I actually didn't count. How many shows do you cover?
Let's see, 3, 10, I think it's 27 because I include Halloween. 26 shows I saw this summer, and then I include Halloween just because.
Wow.
That was my 100th show.
And I love how you divided that summer, that tour, into you have tour lessons, basically. And you start talking, and at first, to me, they're wonderful lessons derived from traveling and for travelers. And you learn, for example, the hard way sometimes, because you were trying hard to get from one show to another. This one, you don't have to eat, you don't have to sleep, but you most definitely do have to do one or the other. It sounds like a teenage kid pushing his body, yeah, or a 20-year-old kid to the absolute limit.
Well,
probably dangerous too.
So
here's another one. If your journey, this is the first tour lesson. If your journeys are to take you past an inspection checkpoint, don't give them a reason to suspect anything is off about you, or you will be there for quite some time. Now, when you say inspection checkpoint, you're talking in Texas, not even crossing the border. They're just checkpoints floating around?
Anywhere that crosses within 50 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. Once you leave that region.
Okay.
So Texas, there's even one in California, not Long Island. There's some Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California.
This is almost a supplementary extra, yes, border. I get it. Now, are you timing every single show now? Like at this point in 94, were you timing them? I'm not talking about now in the present. I meant in your book.
Yes, I just started. Well, I've been timing since 91, but as a bit of a joke, it was one thing that made a lot of sense to me, but no one else found funny. I wrote this essay about Tila and how she wasn't really a spy.
Yeah.
Which is one of my early fishnet claims to fame, was this essay. And so I wrote this thing. I'm like, I'm going to get a petition to trade to make them not say Tila's a spy anymore. Just kind of like a funny little thing.
Right.
So I had a clipboard, because you never have a petition, you have to have a clipboard. And I realized within 5 seconds of arriving in the bomb factory parking lot, no one had any interest in playing along with this game. It was really funny to me, not funny to anyone else.
So a weird-looking wizard dude walks up to you and says, hey, Tila's not a spy. Do you want to sign this? And you didn't get a lot of takers?
Oddly, in the middle of Texas, back when most of the people there were just randos who were like, hey, there's some band playing the bomb factory. Let's go check it out. Oddly enough, no. I just don't understand why.
So now you have a clipboard.
And it turns out a clipboard makes a really nice table for a set list.
Okay. So you started really taking detailed set lists at that point. So to keep from zoning out, you wrote them down.
Yes.
And you paid attention. How does timing figure into that?
It gives me a detail so I can say after the fact, if we get in an argument on the set list committee, I can say, I actually heard it at 7:53 of the show.
Like, I see.
That's a more recent innovation.
Do you have, and does this still hold true today? I think I know the answer to this, but if you took an average of the first set length and compared it to an average of the second set length, are they very similar?
They're reasonably, they go back and forth. All those 5-song set lists that people love so much,
yeah,
Dirty Secret, but those are all like 55 to 60 minutes long. That's the reason why they're 5 songs, most of them.
In other words, they're going to play for the same amount of time, no matter how many they play.
No, actually, the reason why there are all these 5-song sets,
yeah,
is because they chop 30 minutes off of the set.
So in the old school days, 5 songs meant that they super extended the jams.
Sometimes okay, it did, but like there are right, a lot of, usually it means they extended the jams, but then they also, it's on the shorter side of a set.
Okay.
Like say Boise 99, I think it's only like a 55 to 60 minute long set.
Right. Oh,
okay. Really, really good.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite shows I've seen.
Boise 99?
Yes.
Any song in particular stand
the
out?
The Bag.
Okay. The AC/DC.
But it got really, really weird and insane at the end there. I used it at the gym the other day and just, I forgot about this part. This is back to the anniversary of the show. I'm like,
is it one where it gets evil?
It gets pretty evil. And
thank you.
I love sometimes when where all of a sudden they're saying strange things into the mic in parts of the song that they don't normally talk.
Then wouldn't you put that evil, but not like the 12/29/94 Bowie.
Oh, were they whispering and
say, "Yeah, now, do it now." A brief little glimpse in the life of a serial killer there.
That's good stuff.
I don't normally get scared by fish, mainly because I don't do drugs.
Right, right.
But that was one of the cases where I'm like, what?
Yeah, that can scare you.
That and then like a couple of stashes back then got darkened up. And normally it's just more... So, I mean, like fish are like suburban scary.
Hey, so back to your book, the third tour, and this is beautiful. Like you described the venues, some venues that don't exist anymore, places. And like all of a sudden you came to this amazing... vista of Mount Shasta, a 14,000 foot mountain rising like directly out of the flat.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. I mean, I lived in New Mexico, so I've seen mountains, but like I said, my tour didn't take me to the north. I've never seen a mountain that high out of that low of a point.
And I still haven't. I still haven't. And I want to. And
have you ever been to Seattle?
I have not. Yeah. So you wrote, sometimes it's not about the show or the people or the venue, but rather about the places you see you'd never would have experienced. This is a vast and amazing country, and some of the best places aren't on the usual tourist trail. Go to the weird shows in strange places, and who knows what you'll discover. Hello, listeners. This is Tom with a brief mid-podcast message to remind you that I'm always looking for fish-related stories and topics, and I'm always looking for new subjects and new people to interview. If you feel like you might be able to contribute to this podcast, go to underthescales.com and click the Tell Your Story button. I read every legitimate submission, so don't hesitate. Follow our Twitter to stay up to date at Under the Scales. Now back to the show. Right now we're in Vegas. Not much to discover here, although when you look around, the vistas are actually quite beautiful far away.
I mean, I drove from Seattle to here.
Right.
And I don't know if you follow me on Instagram, although I tend to post a lot of my Instagram photos to Facebook and Twitter.
Okay.
But what I love about that sort of thing is I just saw some of the most random...
What's your handle on Instagram?
I'm the Zizek. Zizek was already taken. See, again, it's amazing how often that thing is taken.
Well, so I'm going to follow you now. I didn't know you had an Instagram. That's great. So, but as far as Facebook goes, you have something as well we should just quickly mention as an aside.
Well, I have the Fish Stats, which is public. My regular Facebook page, I tend to keep it.
Okay, that one's private. That's the one that has today in fish history.
That's my daily fish update. My wife calls the morning coffee.
Oh, okay.
Because I wake up at 4 in the morning. I go to the living room. Two of my cats jump in my lap, and I go, and I have one thing, the Fish Stats lets me look up each day in history. So I type in the same thing that lets me show the same page that I told you how to get like the stats for a year.
Yes.
Also, you can type in like 1018. I'll tell you every show is played on 1018.
Okay. And then are you then just pulling out of your mind?
Well, what I do is I go here. I'll cheat. I'll never know how I do this.
Okay.
I go there and I look up, and the first thing I do is I go down to debut stats. It was anything interesting debuted then.
Okay.
And then the next, that's usually the number one. Number two, then, are there any anniversary shows? 20th, 15th,
10th. I see. Right.
The next one I tend to go for, is there any show that I saw that I have a great story for? And the next thing after that is usually, okay, now let's go click on all the sets and look at them on fish.net and see if there's any incredible jams I don't happen to remember.
Oh, okay.
And I go look at them. Oh, wait, let me listen to this one for a while. Oh, this one's pretty good. Okay, I'll write about this.
There you go. I see. Okay.
So it kind of is a progression of those sorts of things.
I do like it. And you're right. It's there in the morning for when I get up. It's great.
Yeah.
Just, fish history.
Yeah.
And then that goes over to Twitter too. So you're at Zizek's on Twitter.
Yes.
Okay, good.
But then I've started tweeting for real just because it's good for some things.
But do you have that one set like automatically Facebook?
Yeah, that's why I started tweeting because someone told me, like I said, those updates, anything I post to the Fish Stats Facebook page automatically redirects to Twitter.
Okay.
And where did we start? Oh yeah, but so I have Instagram. So I'm saying I'm driving for 21 hours to get here, and you see like the most amazing random, especially like when you're driving out here, because I highly recommend the Hoover Dam doing there if you want to be depressed.
Because of the level of the lake?
Because if you drive it, my wife used to live in Vegas for a while, and we went out to Hoover Dam, and the entire way, there were like all this construction and the concrete needs water, and you know, yeah. You're going out there, and then you go to the Hoover Dam, and go to the lake, look at Lake Mead, and part of the walls are white.
And that's where the water used to be.
It's like, that's cool, you know, why is it white? And it's like 150 feet.
Oh my God.
And the thing is, though, you can literally see the environmental destruction we're doing.
Yes.
And they're still building.
Yeah. Well, that...
If you want to lose all faith in humanity to be able to change, drive out to the Hoover Dam and look at that.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it's sad. They're on their third straw now. You know about that? There's two pipes horizontally that sucked the water for Vegas from the lake. And then the lake started dropping below straw number one. And so now that one's open and you can see it. And it's well into dropping out of straw number two level. So then they figured, all right, let's be really smart. And at the cost of lots of money, they actually went under to the very bottom like a bathtub drain. And they have straw number three now.
There's no way that under possibly that. Can backfire. There's no possible repercussion to that whatsoever. Perfect. Great thinking.
But that is depressing, though.
It is one of the reasons I moved away from New Mexico.
Well, one more thing on water management. Vegas, if you read about it, is actually one of the smartest water-managed towns. I mean, yeah, it has the history of sucking dry, you know, creating the Hoover Dam and sucking the lake dry. But right now there's an underground river going back to the lake from Vegas. Every hotel has to scrub and clean their own water and send it back. Yeah.
Well, the problem is it also has to service Phoenix and Tucson. And
yeah. Well, this book, and I can't recommend highly enough, people, you should read it definitely, especially if you are going to drive out west, because David finds lots of cool stuff and talks about a lot of things. The Wiltern Theater, some theaters that aren't there, some venues. The Arlington one, you said, that had like a small Spanish village inside. Is that still there?
It couldn't possibly, but yeah, you go inside and the way it's set up is that the balconies all are shaped like the fronts of houses or the porches of houses.
Right.
So it looks like you're in a public space and it just looks like you're in a Spanish village.
Right.
Other than the fact that it has seats and the floors. It's very surreal.
That's pretty cool.
That's the one thing I miss about the theater days is, I mean, you've been to one hockey arena, you've been to them all.
I know. The theaters are unique. You're right. The theaters are unique. One way to enjoy your book is to listen to the songs and the shows as you're describing them. And I went back and re-listened to the Bomb Factory Tweezer and the Split Open Amount. They're incredible.
I had to re-listen to every single show before I could write about it. Because I'm like, what if I forgot about something? You know, what if, you know, in my memory, it's like I didn't remember, like the Portland Antelope, where Trey starts whispering, "Pretty Senorita." I didn't remember that. I remember the Psycho Killer tease, but I didn't remember that at all. I'm like, whoa, what the hell is this?
And the stash you recommended from Eugene, yeah, Oregon.
The Wicker Basket Arena?
Yeah. Yes. Is that what that's called?
No, that's my name. The top of it is wood, and they're interwoven like a wicker basket on the ceiling. So it's like someone just built a giant wicker basket.
So that was May 94.
May 19th.
Very fast, intense, and loud stash. If you want to go through your book, and you'll notice, like in, I guess in italics or bolded, are these tour rules. I noticed that, you know, they started out as being like helpful
sort of signpost to the fellow travelers. And then they sort of, the tone changed. And I noticed that, like, interesting things started happening, the tone basically changed. They sort of become warnings, and they change to endurance, how to survive. And it's become like personal notes to yourself. You're saying, if your reaction to most songs starting is annoyance instead of delight, and if you're only going because you're praying for a bust out or because you're terrified you'll miss the show, then it's probably time to take a break. And I can see that you, at that point, you're thinking about home. You know, here's another one. Figure out a game or a trick to pass the time when a song you don't like occurs. Or and then this one, these sort of become admonishments to yourself. Give the band a way out if you're talking to them. Did you corner someone, or I forget exactly what happened?
I never cornered someone. I said earlier about not having social skills, but knowing I don't have social skills.
Okay. So you don't corner people.
I always would talk to them like outside the bus, so they always could go into the bus. Because I know.
You don't want to corner, yeah.
Just because there's that tendency.
What I was sort of referring to is, it sounds like you're warning yourself. You're warning, you know, future Dave is going back and warning past Dave. There's a situation that occurred that you didn't have to occur had you followed these rules. And I think you should tell. You went to a show in Des Moines. What happened?
I will say to my dying day, it wasn't my fault. However, it probably was headed in that direction. This just was the catalyst.
So 6/14/94,
Des Moines, Iowa, the city of Skybridges. So I'm at the Des Moines show, and then, you know, I was going against the rail because, especially in 94, Trey was amazing to watch. He could move his fingers precisely faster than I can move my fingers air guitaring. It's just, I couldn't stop watching that. And so I would always go up against the rail, especially as easy. It isn't like now where you have to get in line at like 8 a.m.
Right.
That night. You just would walk in and you just jump over here, go around there. Boom, I'm against the rail. And what I didn't know, what I had no clue about, what I learned the hard way, is while you can see them, they can see you. I always just kind of assumed they weren't looking at me. Why would they look at me? I'm like this dumpy, fat, you know, 20-year-old bearded dude. The last thing they'd want to do is look at me. I figured, you know, I was in my own little world, and I figured they were not paying any attention to me whatsoever as I sat there and, like, you know, noticed every single even vague action that they ever did, of course. But, and it turns out, after staying 5 feet in front of someone for every single night, for night after night after night, they may actually notice you a tiny bit.
And what were you doing that caught their attention?
Well, I was timing the songs.
Okay.
But kind of like you mentioned earlier about entertaining yourself at songs you don't like.
Yes.
I would have inner monologues.
So did you have like a face, like you made a face at a song or something?
Well, what happened this night, I mean, there have been times I did. Again, I didn't think, like, you know, like the jam would go in a direction. I would hope they go in a different direction. I'm like, oh, man. But I thought I was just going, oh, man, to myself.
Okay.
I didn't think I was going, oh, man, to them.
And they took it personally.
Yeah, well, what happened, what brought it to a head, was they did a Fishman song in Des Moines. And he comes out, as he likes to do, and, like, you know, the front stage, clap everyone five. And the guy behind me really, really, really wanted to touch Fishman's hand. And he went slamming me into the rail because he wanted to get up, because he was in front of him.
Right.
To get around me so he could hit Fishman's hand as he came running by.
Right.
Fan didn't see it. I mean, they don't see everything. You know, Fishman's running around, whatever.
Right.
And they start the next song, and it's Possum, which is a song I actually, 94, usually, it wasn't my favorite, but I never minded it, per se. But I'm sitting there and go, God, that rolling my eyes at the guy, but like, wow, he got to touch John Fishman's hand. That's amazing, lucky guy. And I'm rolling my eyes at them. And of course, the band doesn't know that. The band, I mean, again, they might be looking at me, they don't know what I'm doing. So they thought I was rolling my eyes over the song choice.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And I think it's completely understandable from their angle because,
yes,
you know. And so after the show, first I got a visit from the designated bad cop, Brad Sands, who came out.
I've been visited by him.
I hope he did a better job than he did with me. He came out very, very politely and politically, hang out with a bunch of people doing the tour, said, the band hates it when you're up front. You're ruining shows.
That's very political. Very correct.
And then he walks away, and I'm like, what do you think about that? Like, what do you think I felt like that about that?
So you're actually ruining shows for them.
Yes. I mean, that's the bit that stuck in my mind. You're ruining the shows. You know, I'm traveling across the country because I love the shows.
Right.
The last thing I want to do is make them worse.
So now your favorite band suddenly tells you that you can't do that. That's must have been shocking for you.
And then it's like, I'm sitting out there. I'm like, kind of like, now what? Do I just go home? Yeah. Do I continue to see shows?
That must have been so deflating.
And the funny thing is, the next show, Mike had put me on the guest list because the show sold out, and I asked him. And so I'm like, will I be on the list? You know, will I? And there's a day off between the two. Do they really dwell over this? And like, what's going on? And then like 20 minutes later, I'm just sitting there like in shock.
Yeah.
And Brad comes out 20 minutes later. Trey wants to talk with you.
Whoa. And you didn't know if this was like the final bullet or a reprieve. Yeah.
So I go into the bus. I don't actually get to the inner sanctum of the bus. Not being very famous backstage, but I imagine you can tell me this is true. I think it is.
Yeah.
It's an onion. There's always the extra layer that you're not allowed into.
Of course.
I was allowed into the front part of the bus, but not past where the bus driver is. And Trey had a long conversation where I was like, look, we know you don't mean poorly. We've known you for long enough. You don't break rules. You don't ever do anything wrong. But it's distracting me. I see you up front. I start thinking about how long a song is. I don't want to think about that.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about anything. I just want to be in the zone. And I can't do that with you up there. So if you want to go up front, I can't stop you. But I'd appreciate it if you just could either not do that or move to the back.
So very good cop.
And I wondered in the past if Trey was closer to Brad. I mean, you could find out, but I don't know if Trey remembers anymore for that matter, what he thought.
Right.
But, or if he just, it was mistranslation between him and Brad what was going on, or if they were doing good cop, bad cop.
Right. Which one's closer to the actual truth that they felt at the time? Who knows?
No harm, no foul. I mean, I've had, I got to make the album cover, I had all sorts of insane things happen.
Yeah, you had a song made up about you on the spot.
They sang about me in Cruces.
And you had a weird thing that you didn't find out till 20 years later when Trey was on Charlie Rose, that you two shared a moment.
That was 6/18/94. Divided Sky. And a band from the front, especially in UIC. I mean, they're playing all these tiny theaters, and all of a sudden they're at this 10,000-person hockey arena. Where did this come from? And, I'm not in the front row because I'm not a lot be in the front row anymore. And so I figured, I'd make like Deadheads because Grateful Dead were not very interesting visually. So people would go out in the hall where there's more room to dance. And the Dead would even have to put speakers out there so people would hear out there.
Yeah.
And so I figured I'll make an old school Deadhead and I'll do some hall dancing tonight. And then during the Violet Sky, during the pause, the band freezes. And since I look at the band and like everyone else, I'm obsessed with them. I can do this. The cavern dance,
yes. And
I also would freeze. And somehow, in that moment, I was completely bought into that. Like, some guy actually came and started moving his hand in my face, didn't flinch. I was actually having a borderline out-of-body experience of just, like, there I was. And music wasn't even playing. It wasn't. But then I found out later in the Charlie Rose interview that Trey, at the same time during the pause, was also having an out-of-body experience.
I remember him talking about that.
And
that's amazing that you two both had that. Maybe other people did in the audience.
And they didn't see the interview. They didn't know I was doing that.
So something happened something happened right then at that moment.
That moment, yeah.
Clearly something did.
And I've always wondered, was there something going on there? And
yeah, I believe so. And then, you're right. Your amazing album cover, that was really nice. So the karma was kind of returned. Someone got mad at you and whatever.
I wrote a story in the book about the notes.
When you're taking them on?
No, the notes I would write.
I'm not sure.
This is actually the second time, believe it or not, that Trey and Brad did the good cop, bad cop thing.
What?
I actually used to joke before I wrote my book that I was going to write a book about how not to behave in the front row of his shows. Because I learned ways of pissing them off. So back in 93, I didn't have a clipboard yet.
Right.
I was writing set lists on back of the Rift promotional cards they were handing out. Like, I'd grab a stack of them. And because I write so many notes, I'd go through 12 of them in a show.
Yeah.
And then one day, Cameron McKinney, who's like this, at the time he was like a six-year-old kid. So Cameron McKinney was on stage playing a keyboard that was blatantly not plugged in. Mm. And so again, here's another case of me not realizing the band was noticing what I was doing. Bored looking kid.
What did you do to this poor kid?
I didn't do anything to the poor kid. I did things to the band.
Okay. What did you?
Because the kid was sitting there bored, so I wrote little signs. I held him up for him. Like, let Cameron sing, you know, like trying to make him out like he was like the superstar on the stage.
Well, that's kind of nice, actually.
Yes. And actually, at one point, Trey apparently saw the Let Cameron Sing sign, and they went and he did this little Indian war dance on the piano, and I think he got to sing part of Reba.
Okay. All right.
And I thought it was just being cool to the kid.
Right.
But then at the Hollywood Bowl, a few days later, Brad comes up to me and goes, the band hates it when you hold up signs.
Oh, my God.
And then, again, Trey comes out later and it's like, no, it's really not that big of a deal. It just was kind of annoying us that night. So, again, there's that good cop, bad cop going on.
Well, here's what I think that, you know, probably actually did happen. Like, Trey just, you know, full of, you know, adrenaline from playing, probably within Brad's earshot, said, why is that idiot holding up, you know, signs or something, you know. And then Brad, because it's his job to, interpreted it and acted on it, right? And even though it's probably an overreaction in both those cases, it was indirectly or directly what Trey really wanted at the time. So it's probably a combination. And then when Brad probably went back and reported, hey, I told Steinberg he's not going to do that anymore, Trey was probably worried, like, oh, shit, would you, you know, how did you do that? You know, and being tactful, Trey, and respectful of everyone's feelings ever, you know, the whole time I've known him in his entire life, probably actually that really worried him. And he might wanted to make sure that you weren't trampled on.
The one was definitely worse. I mean, that was, okay, you know what? Now you said that, I can actually see how that annoys them. Where Des Moines was like, you're ruining shows. You're the thing you absolutely love, you're destroying it. Good job.
And then you could have like said, you know, these shows that I'm supposedly ruining are phenomenal. So how badly could I have ruined it? Well, or maybe they could have been that much better had you not.
Yeah, they would have been bomb factory every night. You idiot.
Yeah, too bad you
actually
ruined
it. Actually, think of it. After they banned me in the front row, 2 days later was the OJ show, then came UIC.
They got really good.
They're onto something here.
They were right. They should have banned you.
They should have banned me way earlier on the tour. What were they thinking? Yeah, and actually, I had an editor for the book. One thing that she said, though, which intrigued me, because I'm a math person more than the person.
Yeah.
And and that actually, the goal of my book, the reason I wrote this book was I had this image in my head. You ever listen to a Prairie Home Companion?
Yes.
You know that first segment Keeler does where it's like, we're in New York City. New York City was founded in...
A beautiful little historical tidbit.
That's kind of what I wanted to do for the tour, saying this is the road that you take to get there. This is what the venue was about. This is why the venue is there.
I think that's what you did.
I came as close as I could. This is the venue. This is what it's like. This is what the band played. This is what the band plays in terms of their overarching history of the band. This is why I do this. And so I get to the San Francisco chapter and start to talk to my friend Seth, who is largely responsible for me being in this mess to begin with. And Marianne's reaction when we got there was, finally, a character. And I hadn't realized that from the entire 17 chapters up to there, it was me.
It's just you.
The band and the history of everywhere I was, but there was no one else.
Oh my God. That's a kind of good thing for an editor to notice.
I didn't change it, mind you, but it's interesting to see that.
Yes.
It's also kind of like what you're saying about how the rules of tour get worse and worse as it goes along. This is kind of like how people start telling you, like, Walls of the Cave is about 9/11.
Yeah.
Like, no, it wasn't. But if it means that to you, great.
Yeah.
It's like, I never noticed. I didn't do that intentionally.
Right.
But it works so well because the tour's going on and I'm getting burnt.
Yeah.
And my messages are getting burnt at the same time. It's like, it works in parallel without me even intending it to.
That's pretty funny. Well, that's great. I think we've got enough here.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much, Dave.
Sorry that took up your entire day here.
No, not at all. Here, let's just do a final. Hey, so thank you so much, Dave, for talking to me on Under the Scales. I think the fans are going to love it, and they're going to go and visit your sites and your Twitter and your Instagram and all that now.
And buy my book.
And buy your wonderful book. Yes, please do.
Buy all your friends.
Yes. Trey says go read David's book. There you go. All right. Cool, man.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening. David Steinberg's book, This Has All Been Wonderful, is available on Amazon.com. His Twitter is @ZZYZX, and his Instagram is TheZizzix. Follow his Facebook page, Fish Stats, and you'll get his daily Today in Fish History update that you can enjoy with your morning coffee. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Just a reminder that Under the Scales releases new episodes on the first three Mondays of the month. So long.